Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments. Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, September 11th. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan Shartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from New York Oncology Hematology, welcoming two new physicians to their practice, Drs. Nishala Amangari and Mohamed Yonez, now seeking patients at the Albany Patroon Creek location, newyorkoncology.com. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Eric Nemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. He's here to discuss eye care. Now, we always get a lot of calls on Medical Monday. Best to get your call in early. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Nemi, your calls and much more all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, in for Alan Shartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday to discuss eye care is Dr. Eric Nemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center in Bennington. He is board certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology and is a diplomat of the American Ophthalmology Society and the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons. He received his medical degree from the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine through a scholarship from the U.S. Army. Dr. Nemi completed his eye surgery residency at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. He served 9 years in the Army, received a Meritorious Service Medal for his service as clinic commander, and was honorably discharged in 2003. Dr. Nemi, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Eric Nemi, your specialty is cataract surgery, yeah?
That's right. I do general ophthalmology, but the primary procedure I do is cataract surgery.
A lot of people get that.
A lot of people.
Thousands. What advances, first of all, for those who haven't had it, or presumably everyone eventually will have it, what is it and how has the technology and science of it all grown in the last 10 years?
So cataracts are a clouding of the lens inside the eye. So the lens sits right behind your iris and pupil, the colored part of your eye. And over time, the lens becomes cloudy. Aging processes, ultraviolet light play a role. And if it gets cloudy enough, it starts bothering your vision. And when it bothers your vision enough, we take it out and we put a new implant or an artificial lens in its place.
And the procedure itself, as I am told, and of course I'm not a doctor, far from it, that the actual clouding is removed with ultrasound?
That's exactly right. So actually, a guy named Charles Kelman from New York City was an American surgeon who developed this in the 60s. But it wasn't really until the 80s that they started using it widely. And we can essentially go through a very, very tiny incision in the eye. And the ultrasound almost uses like a jackhammer, essentially, and breaks apart the lens and sucks it out without having to make a big incision.
So it breaks apart the entire lens.
Yes.
Hence the need for a new lens.
Exactly.
And what's the new lens made out of?
Most lenses are either made out of acrylic, which is a form of plastic, or silicone. They fold up into a nice small package and slide through anywhere from 1.8 to 2.6 millimeter incision and unfold inside your eye, and they're there to stay.
There to stay, but what's the shelf life of the average replacement lens?
Well, we use these lenses in infants for pediatric cataracts and expect them to last a lifetime.
That's terrific. Our guest today is Dr. Eric Nemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center, and our number is 800-348-2551. Have you been on the show before?
I have never been on the show.
What we do is we take calls.
Yes.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Cynthia in Plattekill. Cynthia, you're first.
Hi. It's so wonderful to be first and not last.
Well done.
I have poison ivy all around my eyes, and I did get to the doctor this morning, and he mentioned something that about possibly, you know, if I'm not careful, getting an eye infection, and he did give me this goo to put in my eyes, and I'm just wondering, never had poison ivy around my eyes before, my you know, ducts are all swollen, and I'm just wondering, is the goo enough? Should I be doing something else? Am I okay?
Gee, Cynthia, that's a great question, and one, let me say I'm so sorry you have this around your eyes. It's bad enough anywhere else, but on the face is no fun. Did we lose the call?
No. Our crack engineer heard some sounds in the background. Hang in there, Cynthia. And when it's time for you to speak, Zach will pot you back up.
Gotcha.
Go ahead, doctor.
So the goo usually is an antibiotic ointment, like erythromycin ointment. And this is a precautionary thing. So the risk of getting an infection in the eye with poison ivy is pretty low. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But the big thing to is your, you know, as long as your skin is not getting more swollen and red and signs of worsening pain and swelling, that can be a sign of infection of the skin. And as long as there's no oils getting into your eye, then it shouldn't be too much concern. But if your eye is getting more red or painful, you absolutely should see an ophthalmologist.
Okay, great. That's great advice. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cynthia. We appreciate the call. Dr. Eric Neamy of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center is here, and we talk eye care today on the program. Let's go to Joe in dear old Mount Kisco, New York. Joe, you're on. He's gone. Joe in Mount Kisco is obviously enjoying the beautiful day and decided to give it a miss. Diane in Western Massachusetts. Diane, you're next.
Hi, Ray. Good afternoon.
Hi.
My question for Dr. Neamy is, I will be having cataract surgery in a month or so. I just stopped taking Restasis. I had been on it for 8 to 9 months. Could I ask what any rebound effects would be from coming off it after that length of time?
Oh, that's a great question, Diane. And are you stopping it because it's not helping you, or just before the surgery they wanted you to stop it?
No, it was just seemed to have helped, and it was time to stop, apparently.
I see. Yeah, so there's no real, you don't have to worry about something terrible happening by stopping Restasis. Restasis really works by allowing your eye to make its own tears a little bit more efficiently. So that effect will last a while, and then it will begin to wane off, and it could wane off after a few months or a year. So you may find your symptoms start returning at some point, and a lot of patients stay on it chronically. And it's okay to do that as well.
Is something that you can stay on indefinitely?
It is. And it, you know, it really can help improve the quality of your tear film quite a bit. So it's really up to you, but I wouldn't worry about stopping it, having something terrible happen in the short term anyway.
All right, thank you very much.
Oh, there's no trouble.
Diane, thank you. And our number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Eric Neamy of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. And we go over to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Has there been any recent developments in synthetic cataract lenses that will correct for both farsightedness and nearsightedness? And what about presbyopia and astigmatism?
That's a great question, Jim. Thanks for calling in. Sure. Going right along with the cataract surgery theme here. So as we mentioned earlier, talking with Ray, we replace the lens with an artificial lens, an acrylic or a silicone lens. And, you know, in an ideal world, when we replace the lens, we would make it so you never needed glasses again for anything. And that's really the holy grail of cataract surgery, at least for the implants. And we're not quite there yet, but there are these multifocal implants that are kind of optional implants that people can get, which can reduce your dependency on glasses after cataract surgery. So they do help with not needing glasses as much for far or for near. You often still need a little bit of glasses help, depending on the outcome. And there can be some downsides to it too, like halos around lights at night. So it's definitely something to discuss carefully with your cataract surgeon before deciding on it.
And why would you decide to do something like that? What would be a situation where you say, well, you better have these multifocal?
So there's no situation where I would say you'd better have it. That's really, it's purely an elective thing. In fact, no insurance companies cover the cost of that. So you usually end up shelling out a couple thousand dollars
okay.
an eye out of pocket for these. But if you went into cataract surgery saying, I absolutely do not want to wear glasses or want to minimize how much I wear glasses, that's my goal after cataract surgery, it's definitely worth considering. But on the flip side, if you're a type A person like I am and can't stand little things being wrong with the television setting or the color or the clarity or this little thing is off, then they may not be the right lenses for you.
I tell you, I have the same problem with my they're not bifocals.
Progressive
lenses. Yeah. It took a long time to sort of figure out how to train myself to use them properly.
Yes.
And I would imagine that would be difficult with eye lenses.
Yeah, the multifocal lenses definitely take some adapting to. You definitely have to have a little bit of an easier going personality in order to get used to some of the negative side effects. So they're out there. There's a lot of companies working hard on trying to figure out how to make it so you don't need glasses after cataract surgery. We haven't quite gotten there yet.
You know, one of the things you see on TV, or at least you did for a long time, were advertisements for laser surgery. Never need glasses again. And yeah. So what happens there, and does it really work?
So,
and what treatment, what are you treating with a laser that makes your eyesight better?
So basically, the way to think of that, so that's basically like carving contact lenses into your eye, I think is the best way to think of that. So it's essentially taking this laser, and instead of in cataract surgery, we're going inside your eye, removing your lens from inside and putting an artificial one back. This, we're just taking the very surface of your eye, and we're using a laser to carve the surface and reshape the surface to change how you see. So that's why a 20-year-old who's nearsighted, you can get rid of their nearsightedness, essentially like putting permanent contact lenses on their eyes, and they're happy. The problem is when you're 45 or 50, suddenly you start needing reading glasses. And
yes.
So there are, you know, it's not a perfect solution. It doesn't fix all the vision problems and all the need for glasses.
Our guest today is Dr. Eric Niemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. It is a Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Saratoga Hospital, welcoming Dr. Rocco Grella to the Saratoga Hospital Medical Group's cardiology practice and the hospital's interventional cardiology program, saratogahospital.org. From Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Nine Pin Cider Albany, hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits, Tuesday through Sunday, now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut, ninepincider.com. From Capital Region Language Center, providing corporations, schools, and organizations with custom on-site training programs in English, Spanish, French, and Mandarin, crlcalbany.org. And from The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5. HydeCollection.org.
It's Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff here, and we're joined today by Dr. Eric Niemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. We talk eye care today, and let's see who has been waiting longest. It's Nancy in Gansevoort. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. My husband has multiple sclerosis, secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. He's having a cognitive problem, which is memory, and I have to now start going to his neurologist appointment because he doesn't remember to ask questions, and if he does ask questions, he doesn't remember what the answer is. He's losing his eyesight. He's going deaf. Every year he gets new glasses, and what I want to know is there any approach for helping him to retain the eyesight that he has?
That's a great question, Nancy, and I'm sorry you guys are both going through this. It's a hard disease. MS, there's the first thing I would recommend doing, and perhaps you've already done this, is MS by itself doesn't usually take away your vision slowly over time. So most people will have onsets of inflammation that rapidly drop the vision in one eye, and often it comes back. So the first thing really is making sure he gets an exam by an ophthalmologist who can look for other reasons for him to lose vision. You know, so some things like cataracts, glaucoma, retina problems, because those are more likely to cause his vision to deteriorate over time. If he's had a lot of optic nerve problems, it's called optic neuritis, is a common thing associated with MS, which is an inflammation of the optic nerve, which damages your vision. Again, that usually does not progress over time to a noticeable extent. So it's really a matter of seeing if there's other things that can be done to help his vision that may not be the MS directly.
So he has appointments, his insurance covers appointments every year.
Yeah.
And every year his eyes are worse, and every year he has to get new glasses.
Oh, yeah.
So you're saying that it's probably not the MS that's causing this problem?
So you're asking me if it's because the glasses keep changing and he needs stronger and stronger glasses. So usually that's not the MS, believe it or not. That's that, because the MS is going to hit the optic nerve, and that can cause some problems with your vision, but usually not a glasses prescription change. And actually, cataracts are the most common cause of a shifting prescription year to year. So it would be a good idea to ask the eye doctor when he's seen, why is the glasses prescription changing so much? And it could, that's the more likely explanation rather than the MS.
Huh. Okay. I'll do that.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Thanks, Nancy. Our number is 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday. And now let's go to Joe in Mount Kisco, who's back with us. Joe, you're on.
Yes, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. I have a less serious question than some of the callers that you've heard before. My wife and I have had this debate about whether or not wearing your glasses all the time actually affects your vision in terms of not making your eye work as hard as it would if you weren't wearing your glasses. And in turn, degenerates your ability to see sooner than it would if you didn't wear your glasses all the time.
I love this question, and I think about this all the time.
It is a great question, and I actually get asked about this all the time. So it's a really good question to bring up. So thanks for bringing it up, Joe. I appreciate it. So if you're talking about reading glasses, so all of us, as we get older, we lose our focusing ability. And so
it started out reading glasses, but now I'm getting a little help on top, too.
Oh, yes.
I have transition lenses.
Yep.
And I wondered if it, because I got it maybe a little, I feel like I was upsold by the doctor I saw. And I wondered if I didn't get it, would I still, I understand aging has its effects, but
yep.
The question remains. Am I ruining my eyes by helping him out too much?
Yeah. That's a great question. And the short answer is probably not. So you've got to, the decision really is when you're farsighted, which is the most frustrating thing to be. So that's where when you're young, you can see everything better than everybody else. You can see 10 miles out that no one else can see. And then suddenly you're in your 30s or early 40s and you need reading glasses before everyone else. And now you hit the point where, gosh, now I need it for everything. So you're right, as you said earlier, that most of the time it's just an aging thing. And wearing the glasses does accelerate it a little bit. So you using the glasses will become a bit of a crutch, but you're losing that focusing ability anyway. And so I'm going through that right now myself with reading glasses. And I can tell you, I put my reading glasses on at night to read, and the minute I take them off, I can't see a darn thing up close. And it's really, it's distressing. But
things didn't used to be blurry all the time, and now they're blurry all the time.
Yeah, and whether the glasses added some to it, it could be a bit, but most of it, I'm sorry to say, for both of our sakes, is aging.
Welcome to old age, Joe. I'm right there with you. Is it very uncommon for kids to not be able to see distance well?
It's very common.
It's very common.
Yeah, it's very common. It's becoming more common even.
Why?
Well, that's a very good question.
Many computer screens?
Well, that's a big question. Actually, the Chinese are doing a lot of work because I heard some estimate about 80% of the population has some sort of nearsightedness. And we used to think it was all genetics, but it's clear that because the amount of nearsightedness is shifting, there must be some environmental factors
involved.
Yep.
So I would imagine there'd be some fairly urgent research on that, given our current state of society with everything is on a screen.
That's true. And we don't have any evidence that actually looking at a screen causes you to be nearsighted.
Okay.
But there is some evidence for kids, and my own kids are nearsighted, is that the kids who spend more time indoors and in artificial light or dim light, their nearsightedness gets worse faster.
How about that?
Than kids who are outdoors.
That's anecdotal, of course.
It's not anecdotal.
No?
Actually, it's a pretty good study, a couple of good studies supporting that. So we think that's definitely true.
Dr. Eric Neamy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. And back to the phones we go. Kim in Oneonta. Kim, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
The reason I'm asking this question is because my father, who was a World War II vet, had to have shrapnel removed from his eyes, and the operations apparently were so traumatic he would never talk to us. I'm wondering if there's any age limit on the person receiving the cataract surgery and if they're anesthetized or if they remain conscious throughout the surgery.
That's a super question, Kim. So the first part of the question, no, there is no age limit. I think the oldest person I've done surgery on was 99. And she was in a nursing home, but she had all her marbles. She was with it, but she was in a wheelchair, and her love was reading, and she couldn't read anymore. So for the last couple of years of her life, after I fixed her cataract, she could do that. So there's no age limit. Anesthesia, you're right. We usually do surgery with patients sedated but awake. So we don't like to put patients under general anesthesia because of even though the risks for general anesthesia are relatively low, especially in someone if they're in their 90s, you know, you worry about, are you putting their life at risk by doing their cataract surgery under general anesthesia? Most of the time, we can keep them comfortable. In a case like his, where he has a traumatic past with eye surgery, that'd be something to talk to his surgeon about to see what the best options are. But certainly I understand the concerns.
Okay. I counsel elderly people, and some of them ask about cataracts and surgery, and I'll pass the information on to them.
That for sure, and you can pass
along. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Kim. You having fun so far, Doctor?
This is great.
A lot of calls today, so let's get right to them. 800-348-2551. Lee in Greenwich. Lee, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon.
My question was more prevention-oriented. I'm in my mid-40s, and, you know, I depend upon my eyes for my work and my play. Reading small things, like on paper, like the backs of certain bottles of medicine is imperative to my job. And I want to know is what can I do to prevent the degradation of my acuity? I wear sunglasses. Is that helpful?
That's absolutely. In fact, you took away my answer, because that's about the one good thing you can do to prevent aging is UV protection, because we know that does cause aging changes. And so that's an excellent start. And, you know, unfortunately, the only other thing, which is the advice we hear from our mothers and our primary care doctors, is to eat a good diet, lots of fruits and vegetables and fish, and avoid the high carbohydrate, high sugar diets. A lot of the preventative vitamins and things are not very helpful, because most of us get a fair amount of vitamins and minerals in our diet already in the West.
I have a kind of related but unrelated question. I'm also a wildlife educator, and I'm always talking about the eye structure, and I had an anatomy question. What is the fovea? What is that? Can you describe it as best you can?
Sure. The fovea. Yeah. The fovea is the very center. So if you think of your eye as a camera, now I usually talk about film in a camera, but you have to be old enough to remember what film is. But the film in the camera is the retina. And the very center of that film in the back of the eye is the fovea. So a lot of people say that the retina is upside down because the cells in it that see the light are actually on the bottom. And there are a lot of wires, a lot of nerves above those light-perceiving cells. And so the fovea is the only spot in the retina where all those wires are pushed aside, and there's nothing between the light and the photoreceptors. So that's where all your best vision is.
Okay.
Go ahead. So in wildlife, you must be talking about, like, like raptors, like hawks and eagles with the two foveas.
Exactly, and I'm trying to describe how many of those light receptive cells per millimeter as compared from a human to a raptor.
Good
and
question.
And what they do in terms of acuity.
Yeah, they have great acuity. I don't know the comparison of the density of photoreceptor cells. That's a great question. I don't know that off the top
Thanks,
of my head.
Thanks, Lee. Do you treat many raptors, Doctor?
Not on purpose.
No. Okay, fair enough. Let's go over to Maureen in Albany. Maureen, you're on.
Yes, hi, Doctor. I have a question concerning shingles and your vision. If none of the lesions are near your eye, are you okay, or are you still at risk for vision problems?
So are you talking about shingles elsewhere on the body other than the face?
Yes.
Yeah, so elsewhere on the body, you're pretty safe. It's really only a concern if the shingles are on your face. And if they're on your face anywhere, we're always a little bit concerned about the eye. And so it's
okay.
It's but if it's
so if
on
there's
your,
someplace else.
Yeah, if there's someplace else,
it's less of a risk.
Not much of a risk at all, really.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Maureen. Our number here is 800-348-2551 on this Medical Monday with Dr. Eric Niemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. Over to Shirley in Amherst. Hi, Shirley.
Yes. I just want the doctor to tell everybody that our eyes need vitamin C about 3 or 4 times a day. Our bodies do not store it. That the foods must be kept cold. They're not even keeping oranges and grapefruits in the refrigerator and Stop and Shop and probably other stores, and they have 500 stores. But the foods need to be kept cold, and nicotine destroys vitamin C. If the doctor could tell everybody that,
okay,
every time he comes on radio and talks about our eyes, he tells them that vitamin C.
Okay, doctor, what about vitamin C?
Well, vitamin C is something that we get a lot through our diets and probably a lot of things that we take that have vitamin C in it. Unfortunately, the studies have not borne out any real benefit from the eyes and taking extra vitamin C. I know there's a lot of talk about it out there. There was one study that may have had a little bit of indication that it helps with cataract prevention or slowing down, but it really doesn't make that much difference. The only time you really see it is in third world countries where people are not getting enough in their diets.
Okay.
But in general, I think we don't need to take massive amounts of vitamin C, not for the eyes anyway.
But we like vitamin C, right?
Vitamin C is great. Really, it doesn't hurt us.
Have a glass of orange juice or something?
There you go.
Delightful. Let's go over to Wayne and Lennox. Wayne, you're on.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About 6 years ago, I had shingles, and I did have shingles in the eye. And from that point on, I had to have corrective lenses quite frequently, probably once a year. I had cataract surgery about a year ago, and I no longer wear glasses. The vision in the right eye is great. The vision in the left eye, which had the shingles, is still a little bit on the blurry side. I'm curious whether there's anything I could do to have that corrected.
So you had the shingles in that eye.
Correct.
And that was before your cataract surgery.
That is correct.
Yeah. So usually shingles is going to leave, or sometimes it can leave a little bit of scarring in the eye, on the cornea. And unfortunately, there's not a lot you can do to fix that. For most cases of, you know, mild scarring that's annoying your vision but not debilitating. Now,
right.
If you have enough scarring, which I hope you don't, but if you had a lot where you really couldn't see very well at all, certainly a corneal specialist, they will sometimes do transplants of corneas if there's a lot of scarring. And so they can give you a donor cornea and trying to clear the vision. But most of my patients who've had shingles in the eyes who have some scarring, it's annoying, but it's not enough to go through a corneal transplant.
No, this would not qualify for that.
Yeah, okay. Well,
increased corrective lenses continue to help? So if I got lenses that were much stronger for the left eye, would that be helpful?
It's helpful to have the right prescription stronger. You got to remember that the problem usually is the cornea itself, that clear picture window in the front has some fog on it, some haze. So if you put some clear lenses in front of that, you're still looking through that haze. So no matter how you change the lenses around, you want to have the right prescription for sure, and having the best you can get is helpful. But beyond that, there's not much else, unfortunately.
And does it continue to deteriorate, or does it stay the same? It
usually stays the same unless you get recurrences. So as long as you don't get recurrences of the shingles in the eye, it should stay the same.
All right, Wayne, thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Vasil in Kinderhook. You're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call, doctor.
You're welcome.
I'm calling about my son, Nazar. He's a 12-year-old boy with Marfan syndrome, and he has his lenses are dislocated. It's a congenital board defect. He's in with, without the correction, his vision acuity is 20 over 150 in both eyes. And with the glasses that he has prescribed, 20 or over 50 in both eyes. So I was wondering what we can do to increase his vision quality in the future, maybe with artificial lenses.
Okay.
And as far as I understand, dislocated lenses are not coming back. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And it's actually a very common phenomenon with Marfan syndrome to have these dislocated lenses in the eyes. Now, when you're 12, and again, I would qualify this with every case is a little different. So a pediatric ophthalmologist would definitely be the one to give you specific advice about this. But if we can achieve really good vision with glasses, even though the glasses are going to be really thick, we love to
and
be...
And that's how they are at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's the best vision he can get, 20 or over 50, in both eyes at the moment.
The problem with doing cataract or lens implant surgery at a young age is your eye is still growing. And it's going to change. So we have to figure out what power implant to put inside his eye to make sure his glasses prescriptions still aren't thick after surgery in 5 years or 10 years. And doing surgery on children's eyes affects their growth and changes things.
Okay.
So we're cautious about that.
Let's take a break here. We're overdue. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Dr. Eric Neamey of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, announcing a new primary care center on Main Street in Fonda, now open, nlh.org. From Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, an inpatient rehabilitation and wellness center, providing healing, focusing on the body, mind, and spirit for those with various forms of addiction. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. Nine Pin Cider Albany, hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, spirits. Tuesday through Sunday, now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut. NinePinCider.com. And from the Arkell Museum of Canajoharie, presenting masterworks and masterpieces. Rarely shown works from the museum's permanent collection. Opening September 16th, arkellmuseum.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. Today joined by Dr. Eric Neamey of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. And our number is 800-348-2551. Let's take one email and then get back to the phones, Doc. This one is from Mary Allison in Wurtsboro, New York. Could you address the diagnosis of Fuchs dystrophy? I was recently diagnosed with it and wondered about what the prognosis is for the condition and what I can do to slow its progression. That's from Mary Allison.
So the good news for Fuchs dystrophy, briefly, very briefly, as best I can explain. So the cornea is the clear picture window in the front of the eye. And in the backside of the cornea is something called the endothelium, which is only one cell layer thick. And it's a very important layer, but you only get the number of cells that you're born with, and you don't get any more. And over time, you either lose them too fastly, too quickly, or you're born with fewer. We're not sure which.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is this is a really common diagnosis. I see this every day in the office. For the vast majority of people, not a big deal.
Okay.
Does not ever affect your vision. There's nothing you can do preventatively. So diet, exercise, those kind of things don't affect it. And I guess my only advice would be don't take up kickboxing. So getting hit in the eye repeatedly is probably not great for your cornea.
Okay.
So that's,
stay out of the octagon.
Stay out of the octagon. Other than that, I wouldn't lose too much sleep over this.
All right. Back to the phones we go with Dr. Eric Niemi. And Peter in Albany is next. Peter, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. Doctor, a little background. I've got narrow-angle glaucoma. I just turned the page on 60. It was diagnosed about 15 years ago, and I had bilateral iridotomy that had remained patent. I wore contacts plus 2 and plus 2.5. I was told in my last checkup that there is some clouding and the beginnings of cataracts. And I've noticed recently that my vision is not getting better. And so two questions, actually. One is, how will I know when the cataracts are affecting my vision or it's just my age? And secondly, my 92-year-old mother has macular degeneration, and I wonder whether or not there's anything preventatively one can do to try to avoid that.
Yeah, so two great questions. So I'll take the second one first because it's the shortest answer, which is if you're asking about preventing it in you, the good news is you won't necessarily inherit it, although your risk is a little higher with a mom who has it.
Okay.
But there's not really anything proven preventative. So they looked really hard at these antioxidant vitamins, these AREDS2 vitamins they sell in the stores, which are great if you have macular degeneration. We think they're helpful, but they don't help you or don't stop you from actually getting it. They may slow it down.
She gets interocular injections, yeah, which have helped tremendously.
Great. It's been a huge, huge development in the past 10 years. Now, in terms of your cataracts, so the good news is when the time comes to fix your cataracts, it'll also fix your narrow angles. So it will kill two birds with one stone that way. But you'll know when they can't give you glasses that help you see well enough in your day-to-day life. So if you get a new set of glasses and you're still struggling with your vision and we say, geez, you know, the cataracts, this is as good as we can get it, and you say that's not good enough, that's usually the time we're doing surgery.
All right, terrific. Thanks very much.
Good luck, Peter.
When you do cataract surgery for patients, is there a time period where a lot of your patients will say, well, gosh, this isn't what I expected?
Do you mean afterwards?
Yeah.
You mean the surgery? Yeah, most of my patients, most patients, I shouldn't say just mine, I'm not bragging. Most patients are amazed at how easy it was to go through.
Yeah.
Because they're terrified, you know, understandably.
You don't want people messing with your eye.
Especially when you're mostly awake, you know, you're sedated but alert enough to know what's going on. But most people say, geez, I wish I had done this sooner. I was so afraid of doing it that I put it off for years, and now it's so incredibly clear, I wish I had done this 5 years ago.
Mm.
But the time to do it is when you're ready, so there shouldn't be any pressure on you to do it.
Let's go over to Hannah in Hillsdale. Hannah, you're on with Dr. Eric Niemi.
Hello. Yes, I have a question about macular degeneration, I have dry macular degeneration. And I was wondering if that ever, can that turn into the wet macular degeneration, the one that we have to be worried about?
Explain the difference.
So dry macular degeneration, this is my best analogy. So again, we're back in the retina, again in the back of the eye, the film and the camera. So dry macular degeneration is kind of like a sidewalk that's cracking and crumbling. So over time, it's slowly degenerating, so it doesn't work as well. Wet is if you get a root or a plant growing up through one of the cracks and heaving that sidewalk and knocking it out of position. And that's what wet is. You get this wet blood vessels growing up through the retina and they bleed and cause it to heave up. So the short answer, Hannah, is yeah, if you have dry macular degeneration, there's always a risk for developing wet. Luckily, it's the majority of people who have dry don't develop wet. But it's definitely a risk, and it's definitely why we always advise you to take those AREDS2 vitamins to help slow it down, if maybe it'll help, and also to make sure that you're seeing an ophthalmologist pretty quickly if you start getting new distortion in your vision.
Well, and so you do have faith in the, or you think that the arids are can reduce the risk of getting the wet macula.
Well, mainly it reduces degeneration. It mainly reduces the progression of the dry. So the dry can tend to get a little worse and worse year by year. So it's the only thing, unfortunately, that we really have that might be helpful for dry.
And, of course, you recommend the dark vegetables and fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to mom's advice of eating your fruits and vegetables. Absolutely. Dark leafy greens, high antioxidant content. Absolutely.
And the need to wear dark sunglasses.
Yeah, and that's mainly helpful for the rest of the eye. We think it's also helpful for the retina. But absolutely, UV protection, we think, is also very important.
Hannah, thank you very much for the call. We'll move along here and go to Norman in Ankrum. Norman, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have an interesting solution to a problem with near vision after I had extremely successful cataract surgery in both eyes. The left eye came out 20/20. The right eye was 20/25. And it did not matter for driving because at a distance, my brain could just throw out or disregard the eye that was slightly out of focus. But they were multifocal lenses, and distances from about 20 inches on closer to my eye, I would have to have a different pair of reading glasses for each of those 2-inch segments. And what I discovered with the help of my eye doctor was that if we put a soft contact lens in the right eye and thus made it see 20/20, then we were starting from the same point in each eye, and then the reading glasses somehow it just worked very well. But I was getting confused, that is, my eyes were sending confusing signals to the brain, when I didn't have, you know, when I wasn't starting in the same point with both eyes.
Yeah, and that just emphasizes how we're really, really good at cataract surgery. The implants we have are absolutely phenomenal these days, but we're not perfect. And definitely the outcomes are not always exactly what we want. And so some people still need glasses, but that's a great solution for you. And that's I'm glad that's working.
Do you think you'll ever be closer to perfect? What will the state of the art be in 10 years?
That's a great question. You know, 10 years ago, I was thinking the state of the art would be a little bit further along than it is in terms of being able to give people far and near vision. I don't know. There's a lot of Not to be crass, there's a lot of money to be made and certainly fixing so that you don't have to wear glasses for anything forever. That would be a phenomenal thing to have. So there's a lot of people working on it.
Okay.
We just haven't gotten the ideal solution yet.
Let's go over to Ken in Orange County. Ken, you're on.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Have a quick question. I'm 31 years old, and I have pretty good eyesight. But I notice sometimes I find myself closing one eye if I'm watching TV or sometimes driving at night. I don't know why I do it, but I feel like it's helping me focus better. Is there any reason behind that?
Tough to diagnose over the phone, yeah.
It is always tough. Not too uncommon a question, believe it or not. Ken, the most common thing would be that you may have one eye that just has a little bit more of a glasses prescription or needs more of a glasses prescription in it, and that it interferes a little bit with your other eye. So you're taking two cameras and they're taking pictures, and then your brain's putting those two pictures together. If one of the pictures is off, it makes the whole thing off a bit. So closing that cloudier picture is why it makes it clearer for you. That's one reason. There's other explanations as well, but certainly if you had a glasses prescription or a refractive error, we call it, in that eye, wearing the glasses for those times like night driving may be helpful for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. All right, well, that's pretty much all I had to that's all my questions were.
Good luck, Ken.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Lisa in Oneonta. Hi, Lisa, you're on.
Oh, hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My father, born in 1918, and my father-in-law, born in 1911, had macular degeneration. So I have long been really watchful regarding my eyes. My father-in-law talked a lot about Chairman Mao telling people to bounce a ball off a wall to increase the telescoping power of the eye, and I tried doing that. But finally, I did have LASIK on my right eye 16 years ago. I was 44, and I haven't needed to wear glasses while driving since. I'm wondering whether my age now, I'm pushing 60, and I do have severe dry eye now, would that preclude me from correcting increasing nearsightedness in my left eye with LASIK?
That's a great question, Lisa. And so, you know, everybody's different, so it's hard to say. One 60-year-old is certainly not like another 60-year-old. You know, I've seen guys who are 75 with eyes that look like they're 50, and vice versa. So it's hard to say, but in general, certainly dry eyes are a big red flag for LASIK. Almost invariably, your dry eyes are going to be worse after LASIK. So if you already have trouble with that, that's definitely something to be cautious about. And then at 60, you're more likely to be starting cataract changes. And that would also cause some shifting and maybe make the effects of LASIK not last as long. So I would certainly be cautious.
How worried should I be about the dry eye? I mean, last night it's really dark where I live, and my eyes were so dry, and I thought I was seeing those flashes like lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, God, put some drops in. I thought maybe I was hurting my retina.
Yeah, not from the dry eye, it won't. No, that's all in the, because the dry eye is all going to be on the surface, and the retina is pretty far back. So I wouldn't worry about the dry eye. It's just really annoying.
Yes, it is. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Lisa.
And what was this business about Chairman Mao throwing a ball against the wall?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that. I haven't heard of that solution yet.
I had
That's
no
a new
idea
one.
He was a pioneer in these things.
It was a new one to me.
I'll have to look that one up for the next show. Joanna in South Hadley, you're on.
Hi there. A quick question regarding follow-up to the cataract surgery in elders. I'm the medical proxy for a 92-year-old, and the good news is she had one eye done, her worst eye done in May, and corrected it beautifully. However, in the 2 hours before the surgery was done, they said they had to put in 3 series of drops to numb her eye, and they said they would burn, and she found them to be excruciatingly painful. I mean, she was really screaming, and so much so that even though her eyes corrected beautifully, she won't have the other one done. And I just wonder, it seems so odd that the drops to numb the eye were so painful. Is that just a personal reaction to pain? Are there different kinds of drops they can use? Thank you. Al, listen.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, that's a great question. So certainly there are a variety of drops that can be used. Some places, like the center we work in, we have a pretty set routine. But, you know, if you bring that up with her eye surgeon and say, gosh, she really had such a hard time, she won't do the other one, there are other options that they could try, maybe giving her a little more sedation beforehand, maybe trying a different anesthetic. So there's definitely ways around that, so it shouldn't preclude her from having the other eye done.
All right, quickly, we only have about a minute here. Let's go to Katie in Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Katie, you have about a minute.
All right, I'll make it quick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So when I was in elementary school, I've had... pretty bad myopia since I was in third grade. And when I was in elementary school from time, my ophthalmologist told me that my vision was too bad to ever get laser surgery. Now I'm 28, and I can tell you that my contact prescription is -8.5.
Yep. So is it too bad?
It's still too bad?
Well, it depends. So you're on the upper end. You know, you certainly get up to minus 10, and there's no way you're getting LASIK done for most cases. But mainly you want to get a consultation to see how thick your cornea is. So it depends how much tissue there's there that they can do the laser on. So that's, I would recommend getting it checked by a LASIK surgeon.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot. All right, doctor, any words of wisdom in the last 20 seconds we have?
Words of wisdom.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know I was going to have to bring words of wisdom.
You can relate it to vitamin C if you wish.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, certainly sunglasses and a good diet are the best preventative things. Nothing else we know of is preventative for good eye care. And, you know, seeing, you know, the other thing is getting an eye exam after 40 every 1 to 2 years is a pretty important preventative thing to do. So we definitely recommend that people do that.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Eric Niemi of Southwestern Vermont Medical Center, for being here today. Support comes from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. I want to thank Dr. Niemi for being here. Thank you for the great calls. And boy, I'm sorry. We had so many calls today. So many people left on the line. I apologize. But you know, what are you going to do? The show's over when the show's over. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Joe Makowitz answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Mr. Lavoulis tells me tomorrow we're going to have a science forum on a Tuesday. Well, that's very exciting stuff. Right now, though, stand by for news.